Are you sick of those damn political crusaders? The anti-libertarian Libertarian Party? Sick of the violence and coercion that makes up the statist servile society with seemingly no escape? Are you looking for real practical solutions to increase your personal freedom and your invulnerability to coercion? If so, kick off your shoes, come inside the polyethylene A-tent, and let's talk Vanu. Join your hosts, Shane and Kyle, as they further explore this freedom strategy and develop it into the modern day. You're listening to the Vanu Podcast.
I was just hoping he could tell the listeners a little bit about the van. I've seen the YouTube video, and it's beautiful. It is absolutely fantastic. But I was wondering if you would describe the van and what went into the layout that you guys chose to do.
Sure. And just real quick, I'll put a link to that YouTube video in the show notes. Go check it out. This is a beautiful rig, guys. It really is. So take 15-20 minutes. Go watch it and see what he's done. For this liveaboard rig, but go ahead, Carl.
Yeah, for sure. And the reason I made that video wasn't really for self glorification. It was just to contribute back. Like, you know, we took a lot of ideas from other people, and then we kind of mashed them all up and made our own take on it. The reason that I did that tour video was just to put it back out in there to help other people who are looking at doing a build or doing an upgrade, and to give them some ideas and a bit of inspiration as well. So essentially, our van is a long wheelbase Mercedes-Benz Sprinter with a high roof. I don't know the exact length; it's about 7 meters, kind of the total length. It's pretty much has all the features. So our goal and aim for the van was to effectively create a studio apartment on wheels. Because we were looking at buying a studio apartment in Sydney, and it was going to cost about $100,000 for a deposit on an apartment. And we were like, look, I bet for far less than that, I could build a mobile studio apartment on wheels and turn it into like a kind of a home office on wheels as well. So with that sort of idea in mind, we wanted to have, as I said, we had a background of having like smaller vans and smaller vehicles, and we were pretty comfortable in a small vehicle, but we always wanted something with a bit more space. With a bit of room inside to cook and to sit and eat and do all those sorts of things. So the main components of the van, when we were designing it, when we were building it, we broke it down into various zones. So we have like a bedroom, which has a clothes storage area next to it. We've got our garage, which is the area underneath our bed, which has two of our bikes on a slide-out tray. It has all our surfing gear and our tools and all our equipment and our water storage. We've got a bathroom with a portable removable cassette toilet, which can be emptied in any sewage system anywhere. So it's really convenient to empty out when we need to. We've got a floor to ceiling pantry for food storage. We've got overhead cabinets through the van. We've got a dinette space, which is a multifunctional space. So it functions as a home office space where I can have the computer plugged in and running. We can clear that away. We can use it as an area to eat food and have dinner. We've got the reversible swivel seat, so we can spin them around and we can kind of get comfortable and kick back and read a book or do some work on the computer. We've also got pretty much a full kitchen set up. So we've got a 110-liter DC powered upright fridge. We've got a 3-burner LPG gas stove. And we've got a stainless steel sink with a drying sort of section on the side. And that's connected to a 43-litre grey water tank underneath the van, which we can shut off, and then we can dump it at the sort of approved dumping areas. So it's all has all the features that you would have in a studio apartment. It's even got, you know, like a big lithium battery for our power storage, and we've got solar panels all on the roof. On the roof, we've got roof vent fans that can work as a ceiling fan or as an extraction fan. So it's sort of like everything that we need and everything that we would have had in a studio apartment, we've got in this van. And the van is super economical on diesel. So we can drive it as a normal car. We can drive down to the beach and go for a surf. We can drive back into town. We can park up in town next to a park and do a bit of work and get some free Wi-Fi or whatever. We can do everything we need, but we've got like our studio apartment with us. And the reason that we did this was because we wanted to be able to sit inside. If the weather is poor, we can sit inside. We can cook a meal. We can do some work on a computer. We've always got lots of power. There's no shortages of anything that we need to sort of go about our daily lives. And we've always got everything that we need with us, because the primary reason of being in the van is that we wanted to have more time to pursue recreational activities. We wanted to go bike riding more. We wanted to go hiking more. We wanted to go surfing more. We wanted to just be outside and enjoying life and being healthy and fit and being able to do those things, rather than waiting until we're 65 and sort of decrepit and then retiring and then not really being able to do as much as we would be able to do when we're 30, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the sort of, that was the principle, and that's why we sort of included all those features. And and everything in the van is custom made, because obviously the van has curved walls and like a curved roof. So everything in here is custom made. It all fits exactly. And it took a few goes to get some of the things fitted in properly. But, you know, we managed to get everything in, all the features that we need. We have it in here with us, and we've got all our gear. You know, we've got a skateboard in there, surfing gear, our bikes, everything we need. So we're sort of like, okay, the waves aren't any good. It's the winds aren't really, you know, favorable. That's cool. We can go skateboarding. We can pull the bikes out. We can go for a bike ride. We can go see some friends at our friend's house. And we've always got food in the fridge. We can, you know, bring out some things and go visit a friend. We're never kind of like having to think about things and plan things. We've got everything that we need with us all the time. You know, even if we're out somewhere watching the sunset and the weather starts to get a bit chilly, we jump back in the van, grab a jacket and go back outside again. We never have to be like, oh shit, we forgot about bringing a jacket with us. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to go home now. It's such a nice night, but we're going to go home because it's really cold. Like, that is never a problem for us anymore. And during our time when we didn't have a van for a couple of years there, that was something that we really missed from having our previous vehicle, was having all our things with us all the time, so we could always go out there and enjoy it and nothing would ever restrict us.
And welcome to the Vonnie Podcast, the podcast making you invulnerable to coercion. I'm Shane.
I'm Jason.
And I'm Kyola.
Since government's the primary coercers upon individuals, this podcast and everything found on the website is covered by a BIPCOT, no government license. This allows reuse and modification to anyone except for governments and the bludgies thereof. You can learn more at BIPCOT.org. So, in the intro to this episode, you heard an excerpt from the very first TVP interviews, which is currently a Patreon exclusive. Jason and I interviewed Carl, that's who you heard talking, a van nomad from Australia, and I shit you not, the entire interview on his part was 100% off-grid, powered by solar. It was pretty cool, as Jason will attest. So if you want to get access to that episode along with other exclusives, just visit patreon.com/Vonnie and become a subscriber for as little as $2 a month. We'd certainly appreciate it. It helps us out, and you get, you know, just more terrific Vonnie content. You can't get this stuff anywhere else. You really can't. So if you're craving more of it, then becoming a patron is a great way to jump on that additional content train, I guess you could say. Weird way of putting that, but I'll go with it. So we've got another packed show today. I've got Jason and Kyle with me, as you heard. So, Jason, I'll start with you here. Was that interview with Carl pretty cool? Did you enjoy it?
Oh, that interview with Carl was absolutely fantastic. If they haven't listened to that, they're totally missing out. And you and I talked about it for what, like an hour after the show, just talking about awesome it was and how detail oriented he was and how positive and how he was just like this really great ambassador for van life or Vonnieism. That was incredible. That was absolutely incredible and inspiring.
Right. And I guess two notes here for folks that may not have listened to it, just our normal listeners. Kyle, do you remember whenever we were doing the introductory episode for the TVP interviews and we said that, you know, there will probably be folks who have different economic perspectives or economic points of view? Well, you know, that was Carl. That was Carl. You know, he did comment in the interview, and this doesn't really, for me, it doesn't take away anything. I'm just kind of, you know, laying it out that, you know, yes, this is, we kind of predicted this would happen, and it did. But yeah, apparently him and Jala don't necessarily believe in the notion of private property. So that did come out, but regardless, it was still a very terrific interview. And you know, he's actually out there doing it. So I guess there's that.
Yeah, I'm not completely surprised, because I noticed from some of the vlogs and other media that are produced by people who are living full time in vans and RVs and such, that generally speaking, we're not talking about ANCAPs. We're not talking about people who are even garden variety libertarians of any kind. We're talking about people who are trying to find a very practical solution to a very pressing issue in their own lives, and thus they'd made a lifestyle change that admittedly is pretty drastic, but yet helped them out. That does not therefore mean they have rooted out the outposts, as old man Rayo would put it. So right. that's kind of something that I kind of expected, because that seems to be par for the course. There does seem to be a, if there is any sort of aggregates of leaning one way toward another, maybe people who are more environmentally sensitive, but yet there's also a consistent pattern of being very frugal too, which you would expect from people of a different persuasion and so forth. So I'm not completely surprised. Who knows? Maybe as time goes on, maybe this can kind of turn into a completely different animal, at least in some sense. But frankly, at this point, I'm not surprised you would have people more of a socialist bent, quite frankly, being in favor of the of van nomadism, mainly because the notion of like being a modern day gypsy does truly get away from the idea of having a bunch of stuff that you just put into a shelter of some kind. At least tentatively, that's how it seems. Now, of course, what's actually happening is that you still have your stuff. They do too. Their stuff is just more mobile. So I guess maybe there's that, I suppose, and maybe they're of the persuasion that possession's not property in some sense, because they have everything with them. But then again, I mean, most people here in America don't own the means of production anyway, even if they are limited, much like myself, to a structure, at least currently, that has a foundation and rooted to the ground. So right. It's very interesting to see how people's ideological leanings one way or another, or even a completely different direction, can vary depending on their own lifestyles. And I think old man Rayo more or less predicted this, that, you know, people only see and ideologically adhered relative to the opportunities they see for themselves. And so if you have somebody who's being a gypsy, they're probably not going to be very big on things like land speculation or even so-called home ownership with a 30-year mortgage and all of the 20 million different issues that entails.
Right, right. And you know, we shared an article on the Vonnie Podcast Facebook page. You know, sometime in 2017, probably towards the latter end. But you know, there is a van dwelling movement in Australia now, of people who decided to chose this route because rent was so damn expensive. Now, obviously, they were from the persuasion that rent is theft, which as proprietarian anarchists, you know, we don't really believe that. But they saw a problem. You know, they couldn't afford rent. They needed a place to live. So what did they do? Well, they didn't go and beg politicians, right? They just decided, okay, well, you know, here's an option that could, you know, solve this problem for us. Okay, cool. We'll go, you know, live a nomadic lifestyle. So even for those who are very, very, you know, strict ideologically, you know, as far as associating with folks. Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't count these people out. I really wouldn't. They're more Vanuan than they are not. And Carl is definitely a Vanuan. And by the way, after I chatted with him, we messaged on Fascist Book back and forth. Well, actually, he initiated the conversation and said we need to have another conversation. So we're gonna have Carl back on the podcast. But he's also familiar with Bitcoin and other digital currencies. So kind of want to work that into a conversation too, because I don't know how many van nomads, especially kind of. With kind of a similar story, are familiar with digital currency. So we'll definitely get more into that as we get him back on the podcast multiple times. So I guess anyways, I guess small talk aside, at least for at least that portion of it. So I guess Jason, Kyle, how are things going? Anything new to report?
No, not really. Same old. It's not raining this week, but it's still cold here in the Bay Area. I upped my game. I got myself a little shock mount boom mic thing going, but other than that, same old boring stuff.
Well, hey, studio upgrades are always fun, so congratulations on that. Kyle, what about you, man?
Well, let's see. I got a job offer recently, and after talking with some people that know me intimately, I decided to take it, even though it does put my temp, location independent thing at risk, because I can't be in two places at once. And apparently the corporate policy on using their computers to do a completely different job and trying to get paid twice, even if I could somehow manage it, isn't feasible. So there still might be a possibility I might be able to do like 16-hour days, 7 days a week for 2 months. But honestly, I'm just not seeing it right offhand because I need to sleep at some point. Different people have different, endurance and so forth. I mean, maybe I could do it for the first 2 weeks, but that wouldn't be fair for other reasons because I couldn't actually finish it out. So I'm kind of looking at risk of breaching contract, which was something I kind of did not want to do. However, that being said, the reason why I took it was because the job offer with the other company was because it was a promotion and it was double the pay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I thought it was only going to be a couple bucks more, and if that was the case, it would have been the equivalent of, after crunching down the numbers, would have been the equivalent of like a $5,000 annual pay cut. This is a raise for me, and it covers two of my jobs and more, because it's double.
Right. Well, that's really incredible, man. Because I know with those, as you've kind of told the listeners of TVP for a while, I mean, it's kind of a sporadic kind of schedule, right? And with this one, I'm presuming this was that full time one that we talked about in previous episodes. So this is
the full time one.
You've got a full time job, a regular schedule, and
except for this week,
twice as much money.
Yes, and it's enough to cover like two jobs. So if I have to do breach of contract, yes, it's bad. I probably won't get any more work from them, but it does mean that I can actually save more and a lot quicker, which is definitely positive. Obviously, this week is the training week, so the schedules are kind of off kilter. Also, starting tomorrow and for like the next 2 days, I'm apparently on a field trip. Like actually at another different warehouse, not the one I worked at. And so instead of like when the corporate guys went to visit the warehouse I used to work at, and I get to say used to now, I get to say former now, at the warehouse I used to work at, where I was basically treated like an irresponsible little brat, even though I actually followed all the rules and actually was told I was better than most of my colleagues there. There would be the corporate guys that would come in and tour the site and all that. Well, starting tomorrow, I get to be one of the corporate guys that goes and tours this other different warehouse.
Because
my job basically is to make sure that these guys stop hemorrhaging money, because this one warehouse as part of an overall network is hemorrhaging something on the order of $100 million.
God damn.
At least.
Damn.
At least. So the reason for my job and those of my colleagues are growing department. It like there's still like empty desks and the whole thing's going to get filled over the next month or two or thereabouts is to basically save the company well in excess of $100 million. And they're willing to invest in our department to basically cut costs, get the cost of the packages down like well below 26 cents, well below that, because that's where it's at right now. Yeah, so the idea is basically efficiency, 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 cut whatever you have to, because unfortunately, not to get too specific, although probably smart people can probably figure this out, the head personnel at each of the warehouses are overloaded. They're doing too much stuff on the computers and not enough stuff actually on the main warehouse floors. Our job is to basically do all the computer shit, all the planning, all the mental stuff, making sure that everything gets delivered to where it needs to be and, accurately and on time. So basically kind of the stuff I was insisting on back when I was a grunt. Well, now as one of the full-time corporate guys, it is actually not just encouraged. It is my fucking job to make sure that things get to where they need to be and accurately and on time. So in essence, I'm actually kind of being paid for what I was kind of sort of doing before in a more limited sense.
Right, right. And, yeah, and this is pretty big, man. If you're making twice as much money, that gets you towards your financial independence twice as fast.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's pretty drastic. You know, if it was 20 years before, now it's 10 years. Maybe, you know, after more pay raises, maybe even less than that. So that's pretty incredible.
It's possible. Thank you. And it was kind of a miracle in some sense, because this has been an ongoing issue for like 4 months. And I was about to give up like as about 2 weeks ago. But then there were some more... there was some more contact. I had yet another, a third interview. They really put me through the paces. I mean, really. I mean, I haven't gone through, and I wrote multiple essays. I had to give, one of them was in detail, my experience with Microsoft Excel, basically any sort of spreadsheets, even though I encouraged them, maybe we should use OpenOffice, but they really weren't open to free and open source software. Shocker, shocker, shocker. And so basically the long and the short of it is that, yesterday was my first day, and tomorrow I'm the only one of my hired group that actually gets to do a field, basically a field inspection for 3 days, where I'm actually on the main floor with these guys who are essentially my subordinates in some sense, because I'm the guy from corporate. And so they're basically going to describe to me basically how they do their, and I'm going to be there for 3 days, like all day. And actually, in fact, we'll need to kind of get on with this episode, because I report for duty at 4 a.m., which means which means leave home at 3, which means get up at 2 a.m. So obviously we'll get on here shortly. But yeah, there are some costs to this. Obviously, I didn't really want to break my contract. I like the independent location thing, which I did the temp gig once before. That was telecommuting and all that. That was good. But I don't know. I've got 3 weeks to decide if this is really kind of for me, because that's my training period. That's training period plus first 2 weeks, and then the contract period starts with the other company. It's kind of a balancing act right now. Oh, and I'm still doing the hotel gig on the weekends, by the way. So,
hey, there you go. There you go.
So there is that. I think the long and the short of it is I'm taking quite a risk here, because if this goes down badly, I probably won't get my old warehouse job back. Because otherwise that would be like a weird demotion. People were kind of wishing me well. I mean, and even then, at that point, I'd rather work for a different company, same industry, but for a different company. And at least the pay would be, starting pay was $15 an hour instead of the $10.50 that I have been paid this entire time. So even then, it would still be a raise in a sense, but this is kind of almost like a bonus, even if I did quit on the sooner side. I don't know. The next 3 weeks are really the real trial period. The normal fixed schedule starts next week. This week it's all over the map. Like today I started at 6 a.m. First day was 10 a.m., which was yesterday. Tomorrow is 4 a.m. So training week is kind of all over the place. And then we have our regular schedules next week. And I actually had to negotiate with my boss's boss, who did the third interview, that, oh, by the way, I also work at a hotel on the weekends. Could you like maybe shift my days of the week back, like, buy a day so I can like work a little bit on the weekend, one part of the weekend, so it doesn't like, so this kind of nicely balances out. It's like, oh yeah, we can accommodate that. I'm like, great, because like I'm happy on a full fixed schedule. I just can't be in two places at once, so you know.
Right. Well, that's definitely great news. Really is. So yeah,
at the same time,
congratulations on that.
Thank you. And there's all sorts of acronyms and some other stuff that I'm kind of trying to learn in some sense. I will say this, though. At the same time, I'm also cutting costs quite a bit. You know, there's quite a bit of stuff that I've been selling off and otherwise just getting rid of and paring down, hopefully to the point where I won't need an apartment soon. So keep your fingers crossed on that. So it's quite literally as I get. It's kind of like physical exercise, where if you want to get fit, you basically have to not just eat less, you have to exercise more. Same idea here. You have to increase income while also reducing expenses. And that's how you kind of that's how you even begin even becoming more financially independent. So I'm cutting, and whereas the other thing's going up, at least for now. So that's kind of where it's at. I didn't mean to ramble on there, but it's a lot has happened in a very condensed period. Because originally I was going to start on the 11th, and during that third interview, my boss's boss said, no, we need you to start technically on the 4th, which was day before yesterday. And so, yeah, When I went up on Saturday and said it to the guy who basically tried to get me fired from the warehouse, and I said, "Oh yeah, I need to drop these shifts." And I wrote down this long list, and he's like, "What is going on? It's the death in the family. Are you quitting? Like, what's going on?" I said, "No, I got promoted." And he was actually happy for me. And the only reason he was happy for me is because he won't have to deal with my dumbass anymore.
Right,
so it was
right.
Very much no, because the only time he ever said anything nice to me before was when the first round of me trying to get this promotion. He said, "Oh yeah, I think you would be good at corporate. I think you'd be good, you know, doing, you know, in essence,
kind of
not
a, kind of a
here.
Good riddance." See ya.
Yeah, yeah. It was basically he's a big fish in a small pond, and I was in his pond, making him look bad. I mean, that's the bottom line. That's pretty much that, man. So cross your fingers these next 3 weeks go okay, because it would suck if I had to resign.
Right, right, and I'll say this again, but you know, since you know some of that money that you'll be able to save now, you know, you toss that into cryptocurrencies while the market's still down, because it's been about almost three to four months, so you know it's a good time to buy in. It's a good time to buy in. So I'm gonna keep hounding you about that, man, because you know, when it bounces back, you know, it'll be a pretty great thing. So
I'll start kicking myself. But you're saying it's down right now? Okay,
it's been down. Yeah, it's been down.
Okay, I'll see if I can throw some shekels whenever I got a spare minute.
Yeah, get in before the bull run. But anyways, today's episode is number 40 of the podcast, the third in our mini series on Van Nomadism. It is quite appropriately titled The Conversion, and the show notes can be found at VonniePodcast.com/40, excuse me. You're going to want to check those out, too. I'll put links to some of my favorite conversions there, as well as some important follow-up material, such as Going Mobile, a really terrific Vonnie publication featuring our boy Rayo. And if you just want to find that now, it's VonniePodcast.com/GM, as in like the car, VonniePodcast.com/GM. So last week we told you how to choose a van for living aboard. Now let's say you've gutted the thing and you're ready to turn your vehicle into your mobile home. What are some considerations? What are some things you might need? How much do you want to spend? Etc., etc., etc. So Kyle and Jason, I'm actually really looking forward to getting my van and converting it. Now, for some folks, conversion itself is kind of the stressful part, but not necessarily for me. I don't have much experience with woodworking, electrical. I'm an industrial electrician's apprentice, but I'm mainly a construction worker right now, or most other skills necessary for, I guess, this conversion. Yet, looking at the endless YouTube videos, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. That, and a lot of folks turn out these incredible mobile homes, like Carl, for example, the guy we interviewed, the Van Nomad from Australia. You know, he did that without a lick of experience. So if you're like me, don't fear. The internet is here, along with a really terrific Van Nomad community. So guys, I guess any preliminary notes before we get going?
You don't want to overanalyze this. You don't want to, you know, analysis or paralysis by analysis. If you make a plan and you stick to it, and you have just the most basic, simple building. Like if you know which end of the hammer to use, you're generally going to be okay. These aren't, you know, you're not building skyscrapers here, right? I mean, you're throwing a desk together or a shelf together. It's not as difficult as people make it out to be.
Right, right. And plus, just keep in mind that, you know, you'll put together this first conversion, and you'll say, after you have experience doing that, you might decide to upgrade, or you might decide to, you know, make changes. You can always make changes if you want to, if things aren't exactly as you want them to be, or if, say, for example, like what I imagine will happen with me, something gets put together just really shitty quality, and I'll get better, you know, by the end of the conversion, and I'll, you know, rebuild it, you know, redo it. You know, that's definitely fine. There's no reason to stress there. But Kyle, you got anything?
Yeah, I would just kind of say that if any of you happen to not have any previous construction, et cetera, type experience, don't let the actual conversion process intimidate you in any way. You know, there's no shame in having maybe a friend who is a carpenter or otherwise even previously experienced in some sort of field of construction actually help you get the plywood or help with the sanding or whatever you need done. There's no harm in some bartering, even if it comes down to that, even if it's some sort of mentorship apprentice type thing in some sense where you're still building it. You just have somebody who actually knows what they're doing working alongside you, telling you, hey, make sure to screw that in, nail that down kind of thing. There's no shame in having some help.
Right, right. And one thing I will mention is – Now there are people that travel around and convert people's veins for them. They're in the van dwelling groups I found on Fascist Book. But you know, I think that's not a bad route to go. But what I will say is, make sure that you're there, you're a part of the process, and if you have someone helping you with, say, the electrical, make sure you do everything and have him tell you how to do it. Because he's probably not gonna be there whenever you're out on the road. And if you have to troubleshoot something or diagnose it, you have to know how the thing was put together, you know, to do that. And plus, you know, learning the process of, you know, hooking up the solar panels and wiring up the charge controller. And you know, troubleshooting the fuses or whatever, you want to know how to do that when you're on the road. So make sure you're a part of the process. Don't just I can understand, you know, if you have a lot of money to invest and you don't have a whole lot of time, it's easier just to outsource it, right? You know, just pay someone to do it all for you. But you know, I don't think that's the wisest decision. You know, since one major aspect of van nomadism is independence and self-sufficiency. So if you have to, you know, call on somebody or pay someone to fix any small minor problem, then you're more dependent on other people. And I'm not saying, like, for me, if my engine goes out or, you know, some other major mechanical repair, I'm not going to know how to do that. I'm just not. So I'm going to outsource too. But for the basic stuff, for kind of the troubleshooting and things like that that'll happen that you have the ability to fix, you know, it's very important that you can be self-sufficient in that way.
Right. Oh. So absent a engine overhaul, you should be able to deal with, you know, little things here, little things there that if built up could actually kind of be a bit of a headache. I mean, that's kind of the point. So not any one big particular or unusually specific high-tech fix-it thing that you need, like, a lot of equipment for. But things like you get a flat tire, or you mentioned the wiring with the solar panels. Stuff like that, yeah, you should be able to fix it on the road.
Right, and one other thing, and I'll turn it over to you, Jason. Like, just say, for example, that you're out in the desert in Arizona or something, and you're, you know, 2 hours away from civilization, and your solar panels stop working. You need to be able to fix that yourself. Right. You need to be able to fix that, or you need to be able to, even if you have to go to like the van dwelling groups on Fascistbook and say, hey, here's the problem. Can anyone, you know, shoot me some suggestions on what might be the issue? But you still have to be able to go and do it yourself. Right. So that's kind of the idea here. But Jason, what do you have, man? I know you're trying to step in there a couple times. Sorry about that.
No, it's all good. I just want to say, just as there's videos on YouTube about how to do a van conversion and what you want in your layout and all that good stuff, there's just as many videos on YouTube as how to do the steps of the van conversion, right? There's videos on YouTube on how to use hammers and drills and skill saws and jigsaws, and there's no shame in looking that up. There's no shame in not knowing how to do these things. So video or YouTube is a literal video library. You can find a video for just about anything. So use it. It's free information.
Yes, yes, it definitely is. It definitely is. So the format for this episode will be very similar to last week's, and there will also be similar questions that need to be considered for the conversion. So I guess let's go ahead and get into it. So what are your needs and wants? And Jason mentioned this one, but I wanted to go ahead and lay these two out right away. So if you are interested in this Vanu strategy, just type in van dwelling on YouTube, watch, you know, as many of the conversions as you can, and you'll have a damn good idea of how you'll want yours to be. Because if you're considering it and you watch all these van conversions, you'll say, oh, wow, that's a really neat idea for the shower. I think I'll do that. You know, that's a really nice solar setup he's got. I think I'll do that. That kitchenette's really nice, but, you know, she did that really badly. I'm going to do that differently. So it's a way to get ideas, right? So definitely a way to get ideas. And also check out Going Mobile. Most of the publication is relegated to letters from van nomads back in the 1960s to 80s discussing their rigs, living situations, obstacles, etc. But there are also diagrams, pictures, and tutorials on how to convert a vehicle to a liveaboard. Now, I will say, as kind of a disclaimer, this is an old publication, so the pictures are in black and white, and they're kind of hard to see. But still, that's another great resource. It really, really is. So I guess we'll start by just saying some folks go real bare bones with their conversions. You could have a stock minivan, toss in a small twin size mattress, build a couple of shelves and a kitchen area and hit the road. Might take you one day to do. You can do it that simple. You really can. And for some of the folks, I think Carl mentioned this, is even if you do have a van and you're planning on doing some big conversion, It's not a bad idea to toss a mattress in there, maybe toss in just a little cook stove, and then go out, you know, on a weekend trip or, you know, a couple week trip and find out what you'll really need out there on the road. And that's, I guess, a practice run. What out there, when you were out there, what did you say? Oh, you know, it'd be really, really awesome to have this, or, you know, I brought this and this is just complete waste. I don't need this. I can sell it and get rid of it. So yeah, there's the option of going bare bones just from your preferences and your needs. And then there's also kind of the practice run variety where, you know, just go bare bones to get a feel for it and figure out what you'll actually need. Now, I guess another possibility is you could get a work van, gut the thing, insulate it, put up some wood paneling and some nice flooring, make it look really, really awesome. Add 1,000 watts of solar, which is really overkill unless you're going to be powering a lot of stuff, and a whole slew of other luxuries that will cost you some money, like a flushing toilet or a composting toilet or really anything in between. I mean, you can go if you go to YouTube, you can find the bare bones conversions. I'll put one of the minivan conversions, not really a conversion, just tossing some stuff in the back seat. And I'll toss them in there that are more more exquisite, and then, you know, just a couple few in between. So there's really whatever you're looking to do. There are videos and tutorials on exactly that. So that's a really, really terrific resource there, as Jason said earlier. So I guess I'll stop there for a moment. Momentarily after I turn it over to you guys, I'll kind of go through my tentative setup. But what do you guys have so far?
I just wanted to say, like, In addition to YouTube, there's Instagram and Pinterest and Facebook. There's a lot of social media out there, and these van nomads are on a lot of them because a lot of them do make income on YouTube and whatnot. So they do have to spread their brand to draw advertisement to their videos so they can get revenue off of it. So it's anywhere. There's really no sites out there that doesn't have some sort of van nomadism group or hashtag or whatever. The bare bones conversions, Carl mentioned, you know, getting used to it, right? It wasn't something that you could just dive both feet into. So if you get a van or a minivan or as you did your first weekend with your car, just get out there and try it. Right.
And Carl's, this was like their third vehicle, their third conversion.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Keep that in mind.
Yeah, the big Sprinter was their third or second or third conversion, yeah. But just try it, right? I mean, it's not like camping. It's different than camping. It's not like you're sleeping in a polyethylene A-tent. So just go do it, and you don't have to go over the top. I mean, it's entirely subjective. It's up to the person's individual needs and their finances and their desires. You don't have to go – You don't have to get a big school bus, right? I mean, you don't need all these things. You don't need a full size refrigerator and a massage chair and all this other BS. you need the basics, right? That's all you really need are the basics, and then everything else beyond the basic is a luxury.
And keep in mind, I think most folks that are inclined towards van nomadism, they're already kind of the frugal, well, obviously kind of the frugal variety, right? The frugal and minimalist variety. You'll see some of these conversions on YouTube, and you'll say, "Wow, that's pretty incredible." But keep in mind, the van nomad community. I mean, just if you're out there, you're living this lifestyle. You're living free. You don't have to feel bad about. It's like, you know, I only put $1,000 in my conversion. This guy put like $10,000. Mine's just such a piece of shit. No, there's no need to think like that. Everyone's different. We have different needs, preferences.
And budgets,
etc. Budgets, yes.
It's a van that you're living in. It's not a car show.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. You're not there to show off your Maserati. You're at this, you know, van nomad meetup to meet like-minded people and talk about being free and live free. So that's kind of the idea here.
Amen to that. One thing I would like to bring up at this point is, depending on availability of tools that you need, and also the likelihood of the need you would have for such tools in the future, in some circumstances relative to others, it might be better to rent than to own the tools, especially if you're only going to do like one, right? And I think Old Man Rayo said something similar to that effect, where he was like, it's not really worth it to learn how to make the camper shell livable unless you're actually going to like do it for a living or as a side hustle or something. My recommendation is about buying the tools, buying the sander, buying this and buying that. It might be better to just rent. Again, unless you're going to turn this into like some sort of gray market business, as some of the van nomads do, I would just suggest renting or you know, bartering the use of someone else's tools who, and that person may or may not decide to mentor you, as I was kind of mentioning earlier. So just something to keep in mind.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely a good point. I would say kind of like a basic tool set on the road would be a great idea. But yeah, with the stuff that you'll be using to actually do the conversion, I mean, you probably won't need a Sawzall. You know, you probably won't need to carry that with you. I mean, there's a lot of things that you wouldn't need to carry with you on a van. If you're going to be living in there full time, what's going to happen to that whenever you aren't using it? Well, it's just going to sit there and collect dust. So I definitely agree. Renting for some things, you know, more so than buying, unless, yeah, as you said, you're going to be, you know, doing this as a business. So, Jason, anything else right there?
No, I'm good.
Okay, so I guess to give you guys, I guess, a verbal example, you know, non-YouTube, I'll kind of talk a little bit about what I'm thinking about my setup. So I plan to spend about $3,000 on the conversion in total. And that may sound like a lot, but it's really not, especially as I kind of break this down. So the materials, you know, i.e. the insulation is not that expensive. The wood, if you're buying wood paneling for a massive kitchen, or I guess wood flooring or something like that, that might be a little pricey. But if you're doing like this very small, like 100 square foot van, I mean, it's pretty cheap. You know, these materials, you don't need a lot of them. So like a sink, you can, you know, go to, I know some people go to like, you know, thrift stores or some stuff like that, and you can pick one up for like $5 or $10. That's kind of what I'd be thinking for that too. I don't need anything. I don't care what it looks like. I don't give a shit what it looks like. Water storage. I mean, you have to just get, you know, five gallon jugs, one for your, what do they call it? Gray water and one for your clean water. That's $5 a pop. Like, they're not expensive there. A cheap toilet, which might actually end up being, you know, just you know, I guess just a bucket with, you know, some sort of apparatus on top. I don't know, but we'll just kind of see as that's something I haven't really thought about too much. But roof vents, which that'll probably run a couple $100, but that's absolutely crucial. I'll talk about that more momentarily. But and then all those other kind of materials that I would need, those aren't going to be, you know, that expensive. I'm thinking maybe $1,000. And I guess the solar setup I'm going with, Jason, I was thinking about doing the setup myself, getting one of the solar panel kits with the charge controller off of Amazon, and you can get, I think it's like a 200, you know, like 150 watt solar panel with the charge controller for maybe like $200-$250. So it's a good deal. It's a good deal, but then you have to buy is it the lithium ion battery, which is the best one for this sort of for I guess solar, which that's pretty expensive. Like, you're talking like $500-$600 at that point, probably thereabouts. I'm just trying to give you an idea that it's going to cost quite a bit of money. So what I'm deciding to do instead is they have this Kodiak Energy. It's the inverter and everything in this one box with that battery, and it can take 600 watts of solar power into it. And so I could plug my fridge into it, because I think you need a lot of people have to buy the sine inverters for the their refrigerators. That comes installed with that. And the main reason I'm getting this is if I wire it up all myself with, you know, maybe a little help, that's, you know, there'd be quite a few things I have to troubleshoot and diagnose. If something goes wrong, then it'd be all contained in this one little, you know, apparatus, this little box that would be my entire solar setup, minus having, you know, a spot for fuses and, you know, just various, just hooking up all the inverters separately and all that. I mean, it'd just be too complicated for me, I think. And I'm trying to keep this as simple as possible, and I probably would end up spending, that thing runs about $1,500. I probably end up spending about $1,000 anyways. And I'd save, you know, a lot of, you know, time and effort with that setup. So that's going to be the bulk of it, is the solar power, in all honesty. So additionally, the reason I'm doing that is I need a small fridge to keep my insulin cold. And I don't want to deal with the sine inverters and all this extra shit that I have to learn how to do, right? I want to keep this as simple as possible, so when I'm out on the road, I'm not dealing with, you know, fixing my stuff constantly, right? Or, you know, repairing or troubleshooting. I want it to be as simple as possible, so when I get out on the road, I can live free and enjoy my time and not have these, you know, not have additional stresses and worries when I'm out there. So that's kind of the estimate. It's about $3,000. But depending upon how many retries it takes for some of the conversion, it might be higher. I'm going to screw up a lot. I know I'm going to, because I don't have experience with this. But you know, I'll have a little help from folks who are more experienced. But anyways, I guess I was thinking about laying out like what I'm going to do with the interior, but that's not very good for an audio podcast. So I guess I'll just stop there to give you an idea of what I'm thinking about for the conversion. But you guys got anything or any questions or anything?
My first piece of advice is you said earlier that you're working on a construction site. They are forever throwing away things, and they honestly have no issue with people going through and nitpicking and picking things out. So you could probably get some good material there. But the rest of it sounds good to me.
Right. Yeah. And I guess that is a possibility. There are folks who actually steal work materials. I'm not going to do that. But I'm sure there are some things that that I could, you know, reuse from there.
Yeah, from the trash, not from the work materials.
Right, right. Yeah, that's definitely possible. That's definitely possible. So, keeping the cost down as much as possible, and my you know, current employment might actually help me in more ways than I think. And plus, it's giving more. Like every single day, I do construction work, so it's not necessarily all applicable to, converting a van. But nonetheless, I haven't other than basic stuff for four wheelers and basic car maintenance and such. I really don't do much with tools, so this will definitely help me, become more experienced for when I do the conversion. But Kyle, do you have anything?
What I would suggest is mainly, is everyone kind of taking a dose of humble pie that even if you don't be afraid of making mistakes is what I'm trying to say. There's the old carpentry adage, which you can apply to other subfields of construction, such as measure twice, cut once. That being said, there's especially with folks who don't have previous experience, you're going to make mistakes, with this conversion. So, just take your time, do it right to the extent that you can. And when you make mistakes, that's why hopefully you'll have help to kind of maybe, I don't want to say paper it over, but like fix the mistakes, so to speak, or at least mitigate it. Right. So it's not quite as severe because you're going to have to live in this thing.
Right, right. And another thing to keep in mind, too, is even experienced woodworkers and, construction folks will still make mistakes when it comes to, van conversions. Reason being, when you're dealing with, a house, everything is level. You're dealing with a flat, straight wall, whereas in a van, you're dealing with a lot of curves and a lot of really weird shapes that you have to, mold your construction into. So it's going to take a couple few tries for some things. I know that for sure. But, we're not dealing with, with just a perfect laid foundation of a house. This is, something with a lot of weird, weird curvatures and angles and all sorts of stuff that you'll have to deal with. I guess there's that. Some other considerations, that you might take into account, are you going to chase a lifestyle like, skiing, surfing, et cetera? I'm kind of chasing a lifestyle with skiing, at least in part. In Colorado, in part, but also so I can, have seasonal work and be able to ski for free, which is kind of the idea. But, or like Carl, they chase the surfing and mountain biking, lifestyle. If so, you'll need to design storage for those items specifically. The last thing you want to do is get the conversion all the way done and then find out, oh crap, where am I going to put this? Now, obviously, there are other possibilities, like, Carl has his garage in the back that's under his bed where they keep their mountain bikes, his surfboards and all that. But, there are other possibilities if you do kind of forget. Like, they have the little racks that you can put in the hitch. Whatever. I mean, it just depends upon what you want to do. But just keep that in mind if you have to, put in a surfboard, skis or anything like that. Got to have storage designed for that. Or I guess one other consideration, which I've actually started to think about. So obviously for longtime listeners of TVP, I ride four-wheelers, side-by-sides, all that sort of stuff. And with a lot of the videos I've seen, been looking at, vlogs of the Rubber Tramp Rendezvous, RTR, which is the major Van Nomad meetup out in Quartzsite, Arizona. I think there are like 4,000 people there this year. But, there are a lot of dirt bikes and four-wheelers out there in the desert. And, God, would that be awesome? Would that be awesome? So I've actually thought about bringing my Yamaha Rhino with me, but I don't know how that would all come into play. I don't know how I would do that. I don't want to tow a trailer, but... I don't know. It'd be pretty neat to have that out there, and it'd be an alternative form of transportation. out there in the desert. So I don't know. I don't know. Just other things to consider if you're going to be, you know, bringing along kind of those bonus things for your enjoyment. Then you've got to figure out a way to design that into your overall conversion. So, what do you guys have?
I didn't have anything on that one.
Well, if you're going to do something like that, I mean, again, I'm maybe not all the time, maybe for like certain specific trips or whatever, and then even then rent it is kind of what I'm leaning more towards. I mean, that's kind of the other thing too. Like, if you're going to be using something only once in a while, rent it. If you're going to be using something as a way of life, own it. And you could apply that to a lot of things, not quite limited to tonight's subject matter.
Sure. So I guess the next question, that's always kind of the burning question. And it's something that if you become a van nomad, it's going to be a question you get asked a lot, especially is just, how much did it cost? So how much will the conversion cost? As you can clearly tell from the last section, it can cost as little as $500, as I've seen one YouTube video for the whole interior conversion, $500 measly dollars, or it can be $30,000 as more. I think that's what Carl said they spent on the conversion. Does that sound right, Jason?
I think, yeah, with the cost of the van, it was, I think he said like 75, 77, something like that. So 30,000 does sound right.
Yeah. So, as he said, it's an expensive car, but it's a cheap house. But anyways, it's completely up to you, your needs and your wants. There are examples on YouTube for both of those numbers and everything in between. So as I said, for me, I'm looking for about $3,000 for the van if I can, maybe a little cheaper. And then, you know, about $2,500 or $3,000 for the conversion. That's kind of the idea. Or maybe, may very well get to the point, when I'm actually doing the conversion, those numbers decrease, just out of sheer necessity or out of, more savings. But, I don't know. We'll have to see there. So any points there on how much will the conversion cost?
I'm going to say that no two vans are the same. No two people think the same. So there's going to be different desires, different things that they value and whatnot. So every van conversion is going to be different. All right. Just because you don't have $25,000 to have your ideal van conversion doesn't mean that you can't practice Vanu. Just as Carl said, and as we have suggested before, get a small one, right? Get a small van, start out, you know, take weekend trips, take week long trip, take a month long trip and go from there. The van that you start out with is not likely going to be the same van that you end with, right? Just the same layout. You're not going to start with the same layout that you're going to end with, because tastes change and you learn things. And as you grow in this ideology, as you grow in this lifestyle of van nomadism, your wants and your desires will change. So your van or multiple vans over time can change with them. So again, you don't need $25,000 van, right? $25,000 conversion right off the get-go, right? You don't need a Dodge Sprinter, Mercedes-Benz Sprinter with, you know, right off the go. You don't need all those good stuff, right? I mean, you can start very, very simply and build as time and money allow.
Right. And yeah, by the way, just because you buy a Dodge or Mercedes-Benz Sprinter does not therefore mean you're going to be, you know, flawless with breakdowns. I was actually watching a vlog series last night. Van nomads from Canada were making a trip into Mexico, and their engine went out on their Mercedes-Benz Sprinter, and guess how much it cost to replace that bastard? $15,000. So
holy crap.
So I guess that's another thing to take into account. Yeah, if you have a really nice Dodge Sprinter, and you know, that may alleviate some of your worries with breakdowns. But you know what? I can guarantee you, like, you just a generic Chevy conversion van or generic Chevy Express, those engines are a lot more widely available, and they're probably a lot cheaper, like maybe $5,000. That's quite a difference in price. But that's kind of a little side note there. But also too with your van. There are no guarantees. You could have a 1990 Chevy G20 that runs to 500,000 miles. You could have the same exact vehicle and have the engine go out at 100,000 miles. It just depends upon, as my cousin told me this past weekend, for most of these vehicles, if the oil's been changed and it's been maintained, then you know, generally speaking, they'll last for a long time. It's whenever you get the bad maintenance, if it sits for 5 years, if that sort of stuff happens, that's when there are major concerns with the engine. I'm not expert at this at all, but that's just what he told me as a mechanic. So yeah, I guess anything else there?
I hate to suggest a more mainstream thing, but is anybody necessarily opposed to having a AAA membership at that point, especially if they get the really expensive car that blows
you
out?
To, yeah, AAA gym memberships, all that sort of, like, those are just, you know, normal operating costs for van nomads. Yes, even if it's something minor, like for example.
No, I'm just saying more specifically in the context of, you know, the actual conversion and all that. Like, I don't know, if there was a bad hookup shortly after the conversion of, say, maybe the battery and something shorts out and you're stuck at the side of the road, maybe you should have the hypothetical AAA membership before you even finish the conversion, to keep it specific. Sure. And on topic for this episode, that's kind of what I'm suggesting. So in case there was a mistake made that unfortunately wasn't a slight one, again, have your backups to your backups plans, not just plan A, or plan B, but plan C, D, E, F, G, etc. I would assume that a AAA, tow you off the side of the road right after you finish your conversion van thing, if worse comes to worse, would be in the cards, I would hope.
Yeah, and even if it's something like more minor, like a tire blew and for some reason the spare is not working. For very minor things or for very major ones, AAA is a lifesaver. I think it's like $200 a year or something like that. I don't know how much it is specifically. I think that's the number I remember from one of the van nomads. But yeah, it's kind of a no brainer for a cost. The last thing you want is to be stuck somewhere, especially if it's a very little traveled road in the desert. So. Certainly a good point.
But even if it's not necessarily that, and you can get a tow truck out there without the AAA membership. I remember a friend of mine paid.
It's gonna cost a lot of money,
more.
Right. It's gonna cost a lot of money if you just call a tow truck.
Right, and that's kind of the problem. So usually the trade off is usually worth it.
Definitely, yeah. I certainly agree. So I guess just some other important things to keep in mind. That's just the name of the section that I had here. There's a lot of mishmash sort of stuff, but important things when dealing with a van conversion. First off, which is obvious, but it needs to be said, you're dealing with limited space. This isn't a 3-bedroom house with a garage you can just shove shit in and have room for everything that you need. Most everything in your van will have to be multi-purpose. Your work area might have to double as a food prep area. For Carl, for example, the van nomad from Australia, their shower, their toilet, and it also served as a drying rack for all of their wetsuits. For most of the beds in these van conversions, they double as storage. For some of them, there were a couple I saw where it was like a bathtub, and you lift up a cushion and there's your bathtub, so it serves as a seating area as well as a place where you would clean up. So everything has to be multi-purpose. I would say most everything. You don't have a lot of room for stuff, and if there's one thing that you use every once in a while, is it really worth the space that it's taking up? Is it really worth the extra weight in the vehicle? I don't know.
I'd agree, mainly because you're living in the equivalent, you're in a type of shelter that's essentially the mobile version of a tiny home. And if anybody who's ever lived in a tiny home, or even knew somebody who lived in a tiny home, or even just took a tour of a tiny home, should well know, the more things that any one part of a tiny home can do, the more efficient the use of space and so forth. And so when it comes to living in a camper van, an RV, et cetera, again, the more things that can be done in less space and all that, the more efficient it can be, the more likely it is you're going to have a good time living in there.
Right. Oh, yeah. That too. Yeah. If you have a bunch of stuff and you can't move around in there, that's going to be really uncomfortable. But yeah, go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, I was just going to say that to piggyback on what Kyle said, this is the size of a tiny home, right? The Dodge Sprinter is about 110, 112, 115 square feet. That's like an 11 by 10 foot bedroom. All right. Think about that. Think about your closet and your bed and all that you have in there. There's not much else that you could fit in there. So everything has to be multi-purpose, or at least most of the things have to be multi-purpose, and you have to fill all the little nooks and crannies, and you have to get very creative when it comes to space, right? All the seats have to be, you know, used as storage. The shower idea with Carl with hanging the wetsuits and whatnot, and the shower, that was a brilliant idea. So there's not an unlimited amount of space. There is a very finite amount of space, and it fills up very, very, very fast.
Yeah, that's no joke. That is that is no joke. So the next consideration, once you get the vehicle you're going to be converting, I'd recommend putting together an extremely specific design for what you're going to want. Carl said that this was a requirement for him so he could even begin to get an idea of how he was going to build the elements of his van. So right now I am considering what I'm going to put in there, but without knowing what van I'm going to get and the exact dimensions, I can't put together any of these specific designs. I can start to, I guess, think about it. But when I do get the van, when I do get the van that I'm going to convert, and I figure out exactly how much square feet it is and how much, footage is down the side for, you know, how much I can allocate towards the kitchen area, towards the bed, towards storage, et cetera, that's extremely, extremely important. So I think that's one, that one kind of goes without saying too, right?
Oh, absolutely. There's several ideas I have for this one. I mean, you can get a sheet of graph paper and draw the size of the van and move things around there. I also, when I was studying computer-aided drafting design, the architectural students, they had to make models of the buildings that they were designing and the inside of the buildings. So you could make a little model and have a sort of a little three-dimensional miniature of the van that you're planning, and then you can see how things work and move them around. Or this is something that I mentioned it to somebody else. I was talking about van nomadism, and they mentioned this idea. Do a tape outline, right? In the driveway or the garage or whatever. Lay down tape in the outline of the van, and then lay down tape, right, to outline the bed, to outline the seating area, the cook stove, and all that area.
Great idea.
And you could get a realistic space. Like, in your head, you could go, oh, I'll, you know, 10 inches between this and that. That's fine. I can walk through that. Well, when you see 10 inches in physical space, it's a lot different than it was in your imagination.
Yeah, that's something I've seen in a lot of the Van Nomad vlogs is, kind of the tape outlines. Those can be a major, major help, and especially in designing a thing, helps you give. It's really hard for some folks, you know, to conceptualize things into reality, I guess, or to conceptualize how things would fit into a space. So a visual is very important. Now whether that takes the form of, I think it'd be a CAD design, or whether it takes the form of, graph paper, or an actual physical, area in your garage that you've sectioned out or apportioned out to match the vehicle. I think those are all very terrific, terrific ideas. And I think I might actually do the third one once I get the van, because I'm a very visual person, and I think that would help me to kind of to get everything in place the way that it needs to be. So you got anything, Kyle?
Not at this time. I'll save it for the conclusion.
Okay. All right. Next one. You'll likely be cooking in your vehicle sometimes, especially if it's, most of the time it's really nice out, and you'll, get out the cook stove and cook outside. But sometimes you will have to cook inside. So a roof vent is necessary for that, in addition to airflow throughout the van. Now, just imagine if you're trapped. Damn, that's a bad way to put it. If you're trapped in the van in like 3 days of rain, and you have no roof vent or no way to get airflow. It's going to be a little miserable, and there's going to be a lot of condensation. It's going to get really humid really quickly. A lot of folks even recommend two roof vents, one over the kitchen area and one over the bed. I don't know what I'll decide to do, but, you know, I think the more airflow you can have in that thing, the better. I actually even saw someone that it was just this really small, kind of round vent on the floor. And I don't remember, was that Carl? I don't think it was Carl. But he had two of these small vents on the floor. We can open them up for airflow in case it's raining and for some reason you can't open up your roof vent or whatever. But airflow is very, very important, whether it's for cooking to vent out the propane or whatever you're using to cook, or just simply, to be able to live comfortably in the van and have airflow throughout it.
Oh, absolutely. These vans, they don't have many windows. And if they do have a window, you're generally, you know, putting up a sheet of plywood and covering the window for so you can put shelving or whatever there. So you're not going to be able to open, generally not going to be able to open these windows to get the airflow. So you have to have the vents or the air is going to get very, very stagnant. And if you're not the greatest cook and you have dirty laundry and you have a honeypot in there and it's going to start smelling pretty bad pretty quick. So you need the vents for the airflow in addition to just basic hygiene, just to get that those odors and stuff out of there.
Yeah, that's no joke. Yeah, yeah. yeah, exactly, exactly. Kyle, you got anything?
No, I'm just gonna save my thing for the conclusion. I'm already writing it ahead of time in a manner of speaking, but I'm listening. Don't worry.
Very good, very good. So, next one. If you don't have experience with the electrical, and I think Kyle alluded to this earlier on, but if you don't have experience with the electrical, either get someone to help you, or do your own due diligence and research. You don't want to make a drastic mistake and come back to your vehicle up in flames or anything. Or I guess another less severe scenario, everything seems to be working fine. You get out to the desert and, oh my gosh, your battery's dead. There's a lot of test runs are important to make sure everything works. And just make sure you don't make any big, big mistakes that, could lead to travesties and make it a really bad time for your van life or anything to cut it short. Just do your research, and if you have anyone that's be willing to help you, definitely I would say take them up on that. Even if you think you can do it yourself, just any additional insight that you may not have had before could save you from a lot of worry later on.
Oh, for sure. Proper preparation prevents piss poor performance. Right? Don't just throw this out there once, right? I mean, you got to research this. You got to know the limits on the different products that you're using and your solar panels and your batteries and your inverters and your converters and your transformers and your Decepticons and your whatever else that you're using. You have to know the limits on these things. You have to know how they interact and how these things work and work with each other and against each other, and it's not something that you can't just throw it up there willy-nilly, all melded together. You can't Frankenstein your electrical, right? That is one of the most important pieces of your van conversion, and as Shane said, you don't want to come back and have your van up in flames. You don't want to get out in the desert and find your batteries dead because you didn't plan your electrical correctly, right? You didn't do the research and ahead of plan.
Yeah, you want to you're gonna have a bad time if you make one of those mistakes, and that's why I'm going with the already factory made setup of that Kodiak Energy, even though it's gonna cost a little more. It might cost a little more. It might. I don't know what it would actually come out to. Some people say that you could save like $600 on the solar if you just put it all together yourself, but for me, I'm just gonna get the I'm just gonna make it easy on myself, right? I mean, that's just what I'm gonna do, and it's got a ton of really great reviews, and it just seems like a really, really good option.
Hey, peace of mind is priceless.
Yeah, and on a more historical note, don't pull a Roger Marsh. Yeah, Shane, you remember the whole thing with Costilla County years ago? Well, what was lesser well known was that Roger Marsh, who was the guy who was working in tandem with the sovereign citizens, the fake judges and all that.
Right.
What's lesser known was what he was doing before that catastrophe, when he was trying to do that Operation Patriot rally point thing, where he was trying to do – the simple way of putting this is that he was trying to crowdfund some sort of political – let's get some petitions together and give it to Congress critters, and for some reason use an RV for it. Well, it wasn't successful because less than $1,000 was collected and he needed a lot more. So what he instead did was that since he was already refurbishing the RV, he decided to use it for moving his family, except there was some sort of screw up and it caught on fire. There's photographs of this. And even though he tried to do another crowdfunding thing to try and, try and recoup some of those losses, it collected less than $200. And that's, and all of his possessions literally went up in smoke. So, folks, when we're talking about be sure about the electrical wiring and all that, we're literally saying don't pull a Roger Marsh. And that's before the Costilla County thing, which is a different issue altogether. But yeah, don't pull a Roger Marsh. If you're going to refurbish stuff and work with electrical, you know, measure twice, cut once, because
this is your home. Yeah. Right. This isn't, you know, if my car went up in flames outside, it would kind of suck. Right. I mean, it would be a bad day, but all of my belongings are here in my room. I would still be all right. But if you're living in this van and all of your belongings are in there, you just imagine your house going up in flames. You don't want to screw around with this. If you have to spend $600 extra to get the solar in 100% working condition, I don't think you really put a price on that. Well, you can't.
No, and
dollars, but
and the tradition and the trade off is more than worth it. So yeah, don't be like Roger Marsh back in 2013, where he's kind of like half-assing it, and or even if he was halfway competent. That was the other thing too. He was working with like an older, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was like an older model, something or another from like the 70s or something. So there was already quite a bit of deterioration that he was trying to refurbish, but alas, whatever he did, well, sure as hell wasn't good enough. Because it did catch on fire like in the middle of the highway, and there's actually photographs of police like blocking off the road. I mean, it was a big deal.
Yeah, that's not, you know, I don't like the guy. I actually genuinely despise the guy, but, you know, I wouldn't wish that upon my worst enemy. Having your house go up in flames.
Yeah, learn from his mistakes regarding that thing very specifically. That if you're doing the wiring and all that, don't play games with that. Get it right the first time.
Indeed. Anything else, Jason?
The proper preparation prevents piss poor performance. I can't say that enough. It's something that I had drilled into me when I was a little, you know, measure twice, cut once. When it comes to electrical, measure 5, 6, 7, 8 times if you have to, because, you know, peace of mind is priceless. And if you're not confident in the electrical work, then, well, that's going to be in the back of your mind, and it's going to affect your happiness, which being happy is the whole point of van nomadism.
Yeah, exactly. So, this next one, and this is probably as important as what we just covered with the electrical. So make sure everything is secured in the vehicle. The big things, i.e. the bed, which that wouldn't be that big of a deal, but i.e. the bed, kitchenette, fridge, you know, those things most importantly. You don't want, I mean, first off, just, you know, a normal transit. You don't want your belongings launching across the vehicle. I mean, that's not good. And God forbid, if you were to get in a high-speed accident, like you're going 60 miles per hour on the highway and you just, you know, hit somebody, you don't want your fridge to turn into a projectile. You don't want your, you know, whatever other heavy item you have in there turning into a projectile. That's not safe, and not safe for a lot of reasons. So for those bigger things, like, you know, the fridge, you know, secure it to the frame, whether it's to, you know, the side or whether it's to the bottom, whatever. Just make sure all those things are very, very secure. And I guess to a lesser extent, for your belongings, make sure you have, you know, cabinets, you know, I guess, doors on your cabinets. So whenever you make a turn, your entire kitchen pantry doesn't fall out on the floor. That's kind of obvious, but still, especially the first one, make sure all of your stuff is secured in the vehicle. yeah, I think that's an important one.
Oh, absolutely. There's a saying that we have in backpacking survivalism. It's ounces equal pounds, pounds equal pain, right? You can travel a lot faster with a 20-pound pack than you can with a 60-pound pack, but you're not going to have as much comfort, creature comfort in a 20-pound as you would a 60. It's the same thing goes with the vans. If you have an excess of weight amount in your van, right, it's going to affect everything, right? From handling, braking, gas mileage, it's going to affect the way it turns, and it's going to do a lot of wear and tear on the vehicle, on the shocks and on the tires and et cetera. But if you have an excessively light vehicle and you don't have a lot of stuff in there, well, you're not going to have all those creature comforts. So it's a matter of finding the balance between the comfort and doing the damage to the vehicle, or in this, doing the damage to your home and the wear and tear on your home versus your comfort. So you have to find that balance.
Right. And you mentioned something important there, and it kind of, you know, went into this last point, but keep track of all the weight you're adding to the vehicle and do your damnedest to keep it under the maximum recommended weight. As you said, it affects handling, braking, gas mileage, etc. So when you're converting your van, as much as you possibly can, use lightweight materials, right? You know, for the flooring like that, that really, you know, light linoleum or whatever it is, whatever sort of, you know, flooring that is. For the wood paneling, just make it, you know, super thin where it's, you know, it's kind of like a feather, right? For the fridge, like for those, you know, those kind of college dorm room fridges, those don't weigh a lot. They're pretty light, but if you get some of those other fridges, they can be, you know, a little heavier. So you just keep track of the weight that you're adding to your vehicle. You know, in regards to everything turning into projectiles in an accident, that as well as just your handling, braking, gas mileage, etc., all of that stuff. Very important to be conscious of the weight you're adding and to, as much as possible, use lightweight materials. And one other thing I just thought of that is actually really, really important, and it's something that's brought up in pretty much every conversion video I've seen. So for like insulation and some other materials, insulation, paint, things like that, you can't use the same materials that you would use for a house, because in a house, they can be, you know, they can be a little more toxic because it's a bigger space, right? But if you're using those same materials in a smaller van, that's a lot more toxicity in a small space. So for the insulation, for the paint, for all of those things that you'll be using, make sure to find out the toxicity of, we'll try to find non-toxic stuff. And if you can't, then find the one that's, you know, the least toxic. Because, I mean, that's kind of your health, right? We talked about, you know, the idea is to be happy and, you know, free on the road. Well, you don't want to develop, you know, any, you know, lung cancer or something because you use toxic materials. I don't know if that would actually happen. I don't know what the result would be, but still, that's a very, very important thing.
Oh, for sure. The off gases from some of those house paints are terrible. you don't want to get lightheaded when you're driving your van.
No, you don't. You definitely don't. So I guess that covers all the points that I haven't actually thought of, a couple of important ones. I knew I was missing a couple of them, but, you know, I gathered that's all the important stuff, I think. It's all the important stuff. So I guess we'll kind of get into concluding the episode, not quite yet, but we'll just kind of, you know, just open it up for discussion as far as, you know, other things to keep in mind for, you know, van nomadism and the conversion specifically. So I'll turn it over to you guys. What closing thoughts do you have?
Kyle had some stuff, didn't he?
Yeah, take the floor, man. Take your 5-10 minutes, however long it'll be. Go for it.
Okay, all right. So there was something like a book report I wrote over a year ago regarding Claire Wolfe's Living the Outlaw Life, which was more accurately or better described. It was a series of articles she wrote between 2001 and 2015, so over a 14-year time frame or thereabouts. One of the articles was from the 2005 March-April issue of Backwoods Home magazine, entitled The Art of Living in Small Spaces. And even though the context of this article was regarding tiny homes, I really think it is applicable to van nomadism, and I think you'll see in a moment. So, and she even mentioned about RVs explicitly. And even boats. So there's your minimalist sailboating, at least to some extent. So she recognized the applicability of all this. She thought that living well in tiny spaces had four elements to it: coping, building, gadgeting, and decorating. And she had different recommendations for each one of these four. I'll just read one from each category. So essentially, you know, like for coping, you know, she had the idea about banishing clutter from your kitchen countertops. You know, don't have small appliances you don't need. Any that you do have, put them inside cabinets. You know, that counter space is even more valuable than it was. The counter space inside the tiny home is more valuable than it was like in the typical apartment or whatever. So you need to be very conscientious about that. Regarding building, you know, in a tiny home or something that, of that effect, she said consider constructing or buying a platform bed with big storage drawers underneath. Bingo. Now, this might be second nature for people now who kind of understand, you know, van dwelling or van nomadism to some degree. But again, keep in mind, she was writing this in 2005. So for people who weren't all up on Rayo and such, this was kind of the first time they were hearing of this kind of thing. For gadgeting, one thing that she suggested were, let's see, pretty much under-counter refrigerators, 20-inch wide ranges, countertop dishwashers, and small European washer-dryer all-in-ones. And she gave a website that I don't know is still around. She also suggested to also if, you know, throw in a few more in here. She suggested replace your desktop computer with a laptop. That one's kind of a duh for us now, right, in the 21st century. Get a TV with a built-in DVD player. Because remember, DVDs were all the rage back in 2005, right? But her idea is interesting, right? So given the technology in 2005, it would make sense that if you were to kind of condense your life down, instead of having a TV and then in addition a DVD player that you plug in, you would just get the TVD-DVD combo, which, of course, given Jason's chuckling a moment ago, obviously is kind of humorous to us now, but in context of trying to kind of almost a minimalist type thing actually makes a lot of sense. And actually it does genuinely save on space. Only problem with that particular type of invention is that, of course, if the built-in DVD player goes kaput, so does the entire TV for the most part, or at least in large part, unless you really want to stick an antenna and then go for analog signals or something, which I don't recommend.
I don't even think you can do that anymore.
No, because they killed
all digital. Right.
Yeah, they killed all that during, you know, Obama's reign of terror. Curse Obama. He got rid of, you know, analog TV. Of course, can't really blame the president too much, at least in some sense, because there's only so much the prince can do. And then, of course, regarding decorating. Let's see. One thing she suggested was having nice big mirrors on the walls or even a whole wall of mirrored squares. She also suggests. Okay, so maybe not that one, but she did also suggest using light colors because they make the rooms look bigger.
Yep. That's something that I learned doing computer-aided drafting, 3D rendering.
Yeah. Here's another one, too, as part of decorating. Have a tabletop or workbench that folds up against the wall.
Yep.
Use small tables with big leaves. And see, now that's pretty standard in a lot of RVs and such. But back in 2005, well... It would only be familiar.
That's what's that. I'm gonna have that in my van. You have like that, and I'm also thinking about like for those doors that I don't know what they're called. The doors that open like on the work vans, having a fold down like cook stove on there too, like a outdoor kitchen area, I guess. But yeah, you're exactly folding them up. Yeah, that's saves a lot of space. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you don't mind, let's maybe have some of that stuff as links in the show notes. So people can look at that in more detail. What I'm saying is that I think there's a lot of crossover between tiny homes, van nomadism, and as Jason was mentioning kind of a moment ago, I would even say backpacking, because the analogy is not altogether inaccurate. Right. You don't have a lot of space. Everything's pretty compact. And so those ounces and pounds, as he was mentioning, are very precious. Or as is the case with van nomadism and, of course, tiny houses, square or even not even maybe not necessarily even square footage. But if you want to get really creative, think also vertically, too. Right. Because some of the vans are taller than others, which may open up some opportunities, but then, of course, reduce others, especially if the center of gravity is higher because you have like a huge vaulted ceiling equivalent or something. Right. Like one of those Mercedes-Benz vans or whatever.
Sprinters.
Yeah, like the Sprinters would be like the vaulted ceiling equivalent, right? And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that gives them a higher center of gravity, which is not necessarily wonderful if you want to go four-wheeling in some sense, right? So I guess there's trade-offs with everything, I suppose. But it's just something to keep in mind.
On that one point that you said, there are van nomads who will actually, like for the normal work vans, they'll actually go and get a topper specifically made for it. So that is an option, like for those who, like if you're 6 feet tall and you need to stand up, or you just want that extra headroom for storage, shelving, whatever it may be, that is an option. But as we, you know, talked about with, you know, kind of the weight, and as Kyle mentioned with, with kind of the added height, you know, that does affect the handling, braking, gas mileage, et cetera, all of those things. So it's all just kind of a cost benefit analysis. Is the extra space worth, you know, maybe having to drive a few miles per hour less or a few miles per hour lower, or maybe getting a couple miles per gallon less on gas mileage? It's all trade-offs. It's all trade-offs. That's pretty much what life is, right?
Well, in at least a lot of ways, whenever we're dealing with the spheres of life that are voluntary and such, yes. There are trade-offs because you're dealing with people's individual preferences and so forth. But yeah, I would definitely recommend people take a look at Claire Wolfe's The Art of Living in Small Spaces, because I think it is directly applicable to van nomadism. She even mentioned living in RVs explicitly, as well as sailboats. So she saw a lot of the crossover between these different versions of more or less something very similar.
Right, right. And I was just putting that, making a show notes list, so I made sure to add that there. But yeah, absolutely terrific, absolutely terrific. I like Claire Wolfe, and she's apparently she was talking about this a while ago. So you know, cheers to her for being ahead of the game. So I guess Jason, what are your closing thoughts for the listeners?
I just want to reiterate what I said earlier. There's no one way to do this, right? There's no one van, one layout that works for everybody, right? We all think differently. We all have different desires and budgets and et cetera, et cetera. So you don't need the Dodge Sprinter with the $25,000 conversion in order to start being a van nomad, right? All you need something simple, right? All you need are the basics, and just it keeps coming back to this, Shane. Just get out there and do it. Right. I mean, you have to. It doesn't have to be a perfect situation in order for you to go out and do this. Just go basic, get what you can when you can, and then upgrade as finances or opportunity presents itself.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's I actually sent you something last night, I think, or last night or the night before, where every single time it's like, do you recommend this lifestyle? Like it's just like a van tour, and it's like, yeah, yeah, I just do it.
Just do it.
You,
yeah.
Just do it. That's always kind of the you know, the advice. Obviously there's other things there too, but the most common piece of advice is just do it. So, for the meticulous planners, that's a tough one to swallow, I think, but you know, I don't think there's too much wrong with it. You know, there are a lot of obstacles that people, you know, conceive of in their head, whether it's the small living space, whether it's the, well, I don't know how I'm going to do X, Y, or Z. I don't know how I'm going to, you know, make money on the road. I don't know how I'm going to, you know, buy diabetes supplies without health insurance. Whatever it may be. I think the trend kind of is, if you don't have answers to those questions, I found answers to the most important one for me. I mean, yeah, that'd be a bad one for me to set out on a van nomad journey and not be able to get diabetes supplies. That'd be a bad deal. So I found a solution for that one, thankfully. But for a lot of the more minor ones, you know, whether it's, you know, more so comfortability or things like that, you know, the only way to really overcome those is just to do it. Because if you sit in your house just meticulously thinking about all of these things, you're probably going to talk yourself out of it, I would think.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's so paralysis by analysis.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, get out there. I mean, you don't have to just you know, quit your job tomorrow, sell all your shit, and go buy and convert a van. You don't have to do that. But what you can do is you know, go out on weekend trips. As we've said so many times so far, go out on weekend trips, go out on more extended trips, and you know, get familiar, get used to the lifestyle. And you know, I don't know how. I mean, for folks that like to travel, for folks that want to be free, for folks that want to limit their coercion, I really can't emphasize how great of a solution this is, and how, again, Rhea was right in the 1960s, and people are starting to listen to him. So I guess that's good.
And
took
there's
him
also,
long enough.
And there's also I agreed. And there's also one side benefit I don't think really anybody's really kind of thought of, besides, of course, the pride and joy, I suppose, of, you know, sweating in the sense of actually something that you built that's that you can appreciate more because you did it right. You invested your yes. sweat and toil and all that into it. Is here's another side benefit too. As opposed to fixed structures where the view is always the same, your view gets to change as often as you would like it to. Now that is something even
so awesome.
And that is something even multi-million dollar mansions literally cannot compete with. because it's always a fixed view. Even if it's a vista, it's always the same one. You do not have that variety unless you have
money. Can't buy that. Well, I guess it can to some extent, but you know, the $1 million mansions, just because you have that money and you have that mansion, does not therefore mean that you get at least that benefit and all the other benefits that come with van nomadism. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, the only change you're really looking at most, but this would be the same as if you were stuck in a friggin' suburb too, is the weather changing. Ooh, whoop-de-doo. Instead of it being sunny today, it's foggy. Instead of it being rainy, it's just pitch black dark because it's the middle of the night. Oh, whoop-de-friggin-do. I don't know. I think the van nomads have a leg up on this one because they can choose their scenery.
You chase the nice weather. That's what Carl said. Yeah, they're chasing the nice surf weather. That's what they're doing. So that's kind of it. Yeah. So I mean, the advantages from van nomadism, I mean, they're just I don't know. So I guess you guys have any other closing thoughts?
Get out and do it. I was just gonna say, get out and do it, right? You don't know what it's like until you do it. This isn't something that you can picture and not like. You have to experience it in order to decide if it is for you or not.
Right. And this isn't something like, for example, even this would be more difficult for some folks. Like for people that want to pursue minimal sailboating, there are you can actually it's called hitch sailing. You can it's really cheap to do too. I mean, you could pay like $300-$400 in a month. You basically cover your own supplies and you help them out, help them sail the ship and such, help them sail the boat. And I mean, you pay $300-$400 and you go on like a month little venture, wherever they're going, and you can experience it that way. But that's that's hard for some people to do, right? To get a month off of whatever they're doing. That's difficult. But with a van, anyone has access to this vehicle. Some of those European folks might not be able to do this too much because a lot of them don't have vehicles. But for those here in the United States, this option is accessible to, I mean, how many? 99.9% of teenagers get cars nowadays, right? Like 16-year-olds. I mean, this is accessible to most everybody. So it's really just go out there, try it for a weekend, go and try it for multiple weekends, and I think you'll really enjoy the lifestyle that this presents versus being in this permanently fixed abode, and probably in the servile society for sure, right? I think it's an option that more people need to at least give it a shot, even if you end up not wanting to do it, just give it a shot, please. Especially if you're listening to this podcast.
Sorry,
I was gonna say for sure. There's websites that you can rent vans. You can rent converted vans and go try them. So there's literally no excuse not to try this.
It's like try before you buy, but in this case, try before you build. Right.
Absolutely.
It's kind of what that is. Oh, and one other thing, Shane, I did want to mention this, and perhaps I should have mentioned it last episode, but I'll do so now before I forget. I can say from very practical experience that one of the really nice advantages of van nomadism is you actually get to save money if you're like the traveling salesman type, if you actually need to travel for business. And here's why. Has anybody ever bothered looking at the budget line items for like extended stay hotels? Because I have. That's one of my jobs. I do the accounting in the middle of the night. So when I tell people, hey, I do math at 3 a.m. on the weekends, I mean that literally, and I will tell you what, that particular employer of mine is making bank, and approximately half the business at the particular one I work at is pretty much all business travelers because they didn't think about things like van nomadism, and as well as the fact that their employers are, this is coming out of the expense accounts and all that, so I guess there's a little bit of that going on too because it's not their money. That's something to kind of consider, but there's also like families. There's families that are another part of the clientele, especially on the weekends, which is when I work. And they're there for like soccer tournaments and other sports related things and championships of one kind or another. And all I'm kind of thinking is that, you know, if these people had decided to do van nomadism, even if it's only like a, dare shall I say, part-time type thing or a weekend warrior type thing, you know, they could have actually saved a lot of money. And I know this because I have done the accounting. They are throwing money down the drain. Don't get me wrong.
With nothing to show for it except a, you know, a roof over their head for one or two nights. And yeah, and see, that's like for the first month in the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, we decided I didn't want to put up a tent at 2 a.m. So decided to go into a hotel at like 12:30, mm-hmm. and I was going to be up and out by, you know, 5, 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. Cost over $100.
I could believe that.
So, I mean, yeah, that's kind of, and that was the cheapest hotel there at that time. So, mm-hmm. you know, Van Nomad, even for like just part-time travelers, you know, part-time Vanuans, which I'm not a big fan of, but anyways, yeah. regardless, part-time Van Nomad, part-time Vanuan doing something else. That's great. But, yeah, just the amount of money you can save. Seriously, I mean, there have been I've watched you know, van tours where you know, the interviewer will be like, so why'd you decide to do this? Well, I'm in credit card debt, and I figured if I move out of my apartment, I can you know, pay it off you know, in 2 years rather than in five. So I'm gonna move out. I moved out into my van for 2 years to pay that off, and you know, I don't think I'm gonna go back. So, I mean. There are a lot of reasons why people pursue this lifestyle, but for Vanuans, you know, it's just that freedom, that freedom, you know, both financially and also physically. Now, I think it would behoove us to mention again the reservations Rayo had about this strategy, and it's something we're going to cover in future episodes, such as kind of the legal interstices. And it's not just going to be legal interstices we've talked about over and over again, but there are actually some new ones. That we can kind of discuss better options, you know, financially and things. Well, that wasn't vague.
but yeah, exactly. And sorry, one other thing before I forget too. Speaking from the other side of the fence, so to speak. Apparently, it's not just with my employer, but it seems to be widespread throughout the hospitality industry because that's what it's actually called, believe it or not. Apparently, if you're going to be at an extended stay hotel. The norm is reserving a room with a credit card because I have been instructed many times in my job performances, partially based on this, besides the accounting, is that if there is a, we were supposed to call them guests, I'll call them what they really are, they're customers. If the customer doesn't reserve a room with a credit card, they can still pay in cash, but upon checking in, they have to provide a credit card so it can be charged for incidentals, which basically means it serves like the equivalent of safety deposit. So, and then, which of course, if they don't use any of that for like vending machines or the equivalent of the mini bar and all that, then all of that's refunded back to them. However, all of that information is entered into the particular software system that I will not name here because it would identify my employer. My point is this: there is no privacy, absolutely none. The one time. Here's a fun little anecdote, which is relevant to Vanuans, and it's probably perfect to end out on this or close to it. There was one fellow who actually claimed, and I believe him, that he was in a domestic dispute with his spouse and he needed to not be at home. And this happened like about 2 a.m. or so. And the guy looked really kind of out of sorts. And he just needed to rent a room and also kind of like hide his truck in like the back part of the parking lot in case she came looking for him. Like he was actually freaking scared. He actually kind of act like he was an abused spouse, but that's a whole other issue altogether. Point is, he said that he liked to have rented the room under a pseudonym. My trainer, following, you know, policy and procedure, was like, okay, well, we can take the payment in cash and all that, but we need to have a credit card on file to charge for incidentals and so forth, the safety deposit, the equivalent of a safety deposit and all that. You know what he did? And I will say use his alias because it's the only way I remember him because I honestly don't remember his legal name, nor is it relevant. You know what Steve Smith did? What Steve Smith did was he got out a prepaid debit card he bought using cash earlier because he kind of anticipated problems like this because I guess this wasn't his first time, or at least he was kind of – he noticed the change in the wits from his spouse and so he needed a backup plan. However he came about doing it, he had a prepaid debit card that – he actually had in the name of his pseudonym. I don't know how the heck he managed that.
Wow.
And that was actually the name that was actually put into the system. And I watched from the employee side of the things. I watched my trainer put it in that way.
That's brilliant.
And this was such a last, this middle of the night, 2 a.m. I mean, this was like pretty much worst case scenario, pretty or I guess second. I guess the worst case scenario would be if he was a fugitive being chased by the cops kind of thing. But this would be like second or third worst case scenario, right? The abused spouse syndrome, I guess. And apparently he was able to pull it off and my trainer let him do it. So maybe that was some discretion on her part, maybe not. But the point is that that's how we got him to room. I even made the key for him. So we got him, you know, yes, sir, here's your cash. You're in the system. You're in this room. You know, and he even said, you know, I don't want any calls. I don't want a wake up call. I want a do not disturb on my room. And we said, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. You know, we'll take the payment. Here's your key. Have a good night. Still the most interesting night I've had there. But I think I think that's relevant here, that even though he was able to make that work, again, had he had a converted van, had he had a place to go where he wasn't relying on a hotel like my employer provides, then maybe he could have just hop, skip, jump over all of that and just gotten his van, driven away somewhere to where his potentially abusive spouse would never have found him. So I'm saying there's more than one way to skin a cat here. It doesn't just have to be a lifestyle change. It doesn't just have to be saving money, as was the case with the other clients, the other customers who were, you know, on the weekend warrior thing with their kids' sports teams or whatever. Even an emergency type situation where somebody was pretty much, he was bugging out. Let's just call it what it is. He was bugging out. He really was. Then I think there's also an applicability there too. And even if it's only like a halfway point, you know, you get in the van and you're bugging out to the actual bug out location. But before you get there, you need to sleep at the side of the road or in the middle of a park or whatever. And then you sleep. And then the next day you actually get to your bug out location, whether it's the cabin in the woods or some other place or whatever it all is. And that, so that's what I'm trying to say, is there's multiple different uses for once you go through the work of converting the van and or the RV or whatever. And then you have a right to go. There's multiple different uses that can help you save money, retain privacy, and even have better emergency preps. So there's like that's more than one way to do reason to do this kind of thing.
That's an interesting. So maybe the survivalists should start having bug out vans in addition to cabins.
Oh yeah.
I think that's definitely a really really awesome idea. Again, we're talking about full time live aboard here. At least you know most. I mean, so I guess full disclosure here for. At least the people that I watch frequently on YouTube, they probably live in their van about 9 months of the year. With Rayo, and I think he lived in the van like 3 months out of the year, and the rest was, you know, in the polyethylene tent, or maybe vice versa. But yeah, typically like these folks will for the folks I follow, they get new vans, you know, every couple of years. So they go back to, you know, their parents' house to do the conversion or whatever, or some other person's location to do it. So I mean, technically they aren't full time liveaboards either. So when we say full time liveaboard, I mean there's probably going to be times like for me, for me in a couple of years I'll probably end up traveling for like 9 months. And then during the summer months, I'll plan my travels back towards Southern Illinois, so I can camp and ride and still have that part of this lifestyle, the lifestyle that I have in the Servile Society. I can still have, you know, that part of my lifestyle, right, down at our property in Southern Illinois, riding, camping with the people that I love, and I can still have that. So for those few months, you know, I'll probably spend a lot of time with my parents, you know, working at the distillery. That'd be my temporary job at that time too. I'd probably be, you know, living aboard my van for like 9 months if I don't live in the van when I'm there too. So I guess just kind of think about that too. I obviously understand, and you know, for van nomads, I mean, everyone's kind of, you know, different. Some folks may not have any family and travel 100% of the time, but you know, there are some things that, you know, people like to return to, and obviously you know, we understand that.
Oh, for sure. Everybody needs a home base or a home camp, something that they can go back to if they need to, or some other place that they feel comfortable.
Right. And as an old man Rayo put it, Vanu is not an all or nothing thing. There are shades of gray. And I guess the shade of gray here is that it doesn't have to be the full time live aboard. It can be a certain portion of the year, like a seasonal thing. And then you know, kind of do something else before you go back to van nomading and so forth. I think that's something really important to consider. It's just, this is just something that people can do that can fit into their lifestyle or otherwise change their lifestyle, maybe a little bit, maybe drastically, maybe somewhere in between, that can give them some more privacy and frugality and such.
Right, right. So I guess anything else, guys, before I close her out?
No, I don't have anything else.
Nope.
All right, and that's all we have for you. The website is vonnepodcast.com. And actually, I think this is wrong, but I actually looked at the Alexa site rankings, and it was like 377,000 in the United States, which means that it was, you know, the LUA site didn't even rank there. So I think there might be some error with their site ranking, because Vonnu, the TVP website, doesn't get the LUA site gets more visits than Vonnu. But still, we're ranked as the 377th in the world, or actually in the United States. As the website, so I don't know, and I don't understand that. But anyways, please consider financially supporting the podcast, the best way being via Patreon. For just $2 a month, you get exclusive access to episodes, such as our interview with Carl, the Van Nomad from Australia, and special announcements not made to the general public. And there is that announcement there if you want to sign up as a subscriber. So if you'd like to contribute more than $2 a month, there are also great subscriber benefits. To become a subscriber, just visit patreon.com/Vonnu. You can also shoot us some digital currencies or make contributions via PayPal. Next week, we will cover the cost of living for Van Nomads and tie the financial independence portion into Van Nomadism specifically. Thanks so much, y'all. We'll talk to you next week.